Welcome to Story Comic Presents, where we interview amazing storytellers and artists. This is episode 349. I'm your host, Barney Smith of StoryComic.com, and we're excited to have with us the nationally acclaimed and celebrated comic creator of Stealth Hammer, Ryan Drost. Ryan.
Thanks for having me. That's probably the best intro I've ever gotten. I will take it.
Cleveland zone, Ryan
right.
Drost.
Oh yeah, definitely that. Cleveland yes. zone, yes.
So this is great because you are now working on issue number 3 Correct. Of Stealth Hammer.
Yeah.
And this is going to be available this summer, correct? Is that what it is?
What we're doing is we're running a Kickstarter. It's going to start April 7th. At 7 p.m. Eastern time, and then it's going to run for 30 days after that. And this time, our goal is actually a bit lower than it's been in past times, and the reason for that is because I've sold a lot of my own personal collection of comics and collectibles to pay for a lot of the issue up front, because I just want to make sure that the issues get made. So, like, I'm putting up a lot of my own money to pay my creators, my artists, and stuff like that. And so this way we can hopefully make sure that we hit this goal like we have in the past, and not have any challenges. Because anyone that's ever done a Kickstarter knows, like, you come down to that last week and you're like, we're almost there. We're almost there.
You've had your Stealth Hammer. You get also Project We Love on the last Stealth Hammer that you did as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that was a nice surprise. We weren't expecting that at all, but and I don't know what the secret formula is for that to happen. Hopefully it'll happen again. but it was like really exciting to also get recognized like that. So it's an all ages comic. So when I say all ages, I really mean that. I know, like, a lot of times all ages people just go right to, like, okay, it's for little kids. But no, I've had people at age 5 to age 95 read it and enjoy it. So, well, something for everybody in there.
And what I love about Stealth Hammer is that it's kind of an homage, and it's sort of like a love letter to your wife, because she is the inspiration to the term Stealth Hammer. That's her nickname.
Yes.
And also it's also for your love of comics from the late 80s and early 90s. It's kind of a love of your own genre. It's also a love letter to Cleveland as well, because you put in a lot of Easter eggs with area code 216. The gnome is 216 years old. So do you feel as though that part of the success of Stealth Hammer is that there seems to be a real genuineness to this storyline?
Yeah, I mean, I really do, because I think what it's always been for me, it's always been about storytelling. We were talking a little bit earlier about toys and everything that we grew up with. And, like, for me, I grew up on a main road, so I didn't get to go out and play in the streets with the other kids and stuff like that. I had my toys and they were in my room, or I didn't be in the backyard, and I would have, like, G.I. Joe creating the Transformers to help fight against Cobra, and then up from the ground rose this tomb, which was Castle Grayskull, and out came He-Man. Like, so I was always creating, like, these stories for myself of how these characters always interacted with each other. And finally, I was like, you know what? I want to tell my own stories. And my wife, as you had mentioned, she had the nickname of Stealth Hammer, not for any negative reasons. And she's a graphic designer, and she swooped in one time and won a client over, and her boss next time said, watch out for Stealth. And then she worked as a brand compliance person, where she had to, like, lay the hammer down, making sure they were using the right colors and fonts and things like that. So she put the two together and called herself Stealth Hammer, and it's been a nickname that's stuck ever since. And I was like, that would be a really cool superhero nickname, and we would joke around about her powers and all that type of stuff. And then I had her drawn as a superhero one year, and that's on the website that you were showing. It's the actual original drawing that we had of her. And she, once we saw it, yep, there it is. Once we once we saw it, once I saw it physically, I was like, you know, maybe there is something here. And so I, as soon as I thought that, it was like one of those, I relate it to this, but not at the same level, of course. But they often say Paul McCartney was known for waking up one morning and he had the song Yesterday in his head and he wrote it out in like 15 minutes. That's kind of what happened. It was like, all of a sudden I was like, once I decided I was going to tell this story, I couldn't write down the ideas fast enough as far as like, who is she? How'd she get her powers? Who are her friends? Who are her enemies? What's her supporting cast like? What's their personalities like? What is her objective? Like all this type of stuff. And I just kept writing stuff down and really fleshing out this world and fleshing out the characters. And then I, from doing a podcast for 14 years, I got to interview a lot of comic creators and make a lot of friends that way. And they helped me along the way about what I would need to do and what I, who I would need to reach out to and stuff like that to help make this happen. And did a lot of great networking because I felt like I was always a good writer, but I'm just like an average artist and I wanted to get top quality people on this. So found an amazing artist, Joel Jackson, who is in Columbus, Ohio. So he actually ended up not being too far away. And he had this cartoony yet detailed style that I was really looking for with this, because with the storytelling that I was doing, I knew I was going to be putting, like you mentioned, these little Easter eggs in the background, whether it be for a reference to Cleveland, a reference to family or something like that, but more so also references to stories that were going to come down the line. So that when someone read issue 3, issue 4, issue 5, they might see something and go, oh my God, that was in issue 1. I remember that in the background of issue 2, stuff like that. And with this issue 3 that we're doing, there's a lot of that because issue 3 is actually a flashback story of one of our characters named Ari the Elf. And we get to see some of the things that happened in issue 1 and 2 from his perspective in issue 3.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's already going to be some payoff there for the reader.
The impetus of the idea started off with the nickname of your wife.
Yeah.
And seeing that drawing and that kind of created it. Talk to us now about the world building aspect.
Yeah,
that.
Absolutely. So once I had that, then I started thinking about, they always say you write what you know, and and that's what you should do. So it feels more real, to your point earlier. It feels, helps the reader feel more connected because the characters feel more real to them. And I can tell you, all these characters now live in my head. So I know how they're going to act and I know how they're going to speak about certain things. So they almost take me on where the story's going to go at this point. But yeah, I started thinking about like, okay, what are the things that I loved? And I always loved superheroes, but I also really loved really crazy technology stuff like Mega Man and stuff like, and Masters of the Universe and things like that. But I also loved the world mythologies and fantasy stuff. So I kind of blended it all together and it worked for the story. And if it didn't work for the story, it wasn't going to be in there, but it really did work for the story. My wife and I went and took a trip to Iceland a few years ago, and it was the most amazing trip in the world. And while we were there, we found out that they have a culture that believes in elves. And that's where Ari the Elf came from. He was inspired by that trip. We have the goddess Aurora, which is after the Aurora Borealis, which also came from that trip. So there's all these elements that came from my life that I wasn't just like inserting myself or inserting people I knew in there, but I was using them as inspiration for characters that I wanted to help tell the story. So that's a lot where the world building came from.
How much deeper did you have to go in like the origins of the powers, and how is that related to, it's all ages, so it's safe for 6-year-olds, yeah, safe for 96-year-olds to read. Because of having creating an almost a sense of like a timelessness in it, how often did you have to, as you're writing it, not make references that only, like overt references that,
yeah,
that would only cater to a certain readership level?
Yeah, that was tough. And in fact, I made one flaw in that in the first issue, which is I actually have a Ghostbusters reference in there. And they actually reference Ghostbusters. The character actually references two Ghostbusters. But then I was like, well, we just had Ghostbusters come out this year, so maybe it's not as dated as I thought it was. But yeah, it was tough. But at the same time, like, it's more so pulling those themes, you know, like My favorite movies of all time and my favorite entertainment thing of all time is Star Wars. And if you look into Star Wars, George Lucas didn't create something new, really, with the story. Right. He pulled from, like, different things that were already out there when it came to hero and storytelling and the hero's quest and things like that. He pulled elements, and that's kind of what I did. I looked at the things that I always enjoyed and didn't pull them out as they were, but more so pulled them out as like, okay, I want this type of character, and I want this type of character, and here's why I want that type of character. Here's what they're going to contribute to the story. Like I said, it's always about story for me. So it's like, if it's going to help the story get to where I want it to be, then it's going to be in there. If it doesn't, then I need to rethink this. I call my writing sometimes Claremontian, after Chris Claremont, because he was known when he did the X-Men to put all these little nuggets in there that he would revisit later and tell a story about. And when you look at, like, even the first page of the first issue of our comic, she's sitting in her room, and this room just has a ton of stuff in it. And that's all intentional, because all that stuff that you see in that room is going to mean something at some point in the future. So, yeah, so it's all about telling that right story and kind of hitting themes and things that people can identify with. Like I said, you have, if people like robots, there's robots in here. If you like little elves and fantasy things, there's that in here. If you like superheroes, our main character is a superhero. She's a superhero of a different type, but she's a superhero. So,
right. Yeah. I mean, so what you're describing is a way is that, you know, writers always talk about there's pantsers and plotters.
Yeah.
Some plotters are people that plan out their story all the way, and then pantsers are just writing on the seat of their pants. But there was a new one that was called plancers. And that's kind of like what you're talking about with Chris Claremont, where you plant little seeds and then you can then revisit them later.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, like, I feel like as a writer too, you have to be kind of flexible and let the story take you where it goes. And even if it's even if it's a mistake, and I'll give you a perfect example, this is pulling the curtain back a little bit. In the first issue, I have a character mention the big bad character of Jormungandr, which is a play off of the name of the serpent in Thor that eats the world and everything.
Yeah.
But I actually mistyped Jormungandr instead of Jormungandr. Mm-hmm. And every place else I spelled it right, except this one character one time said Jormungandr. And nobody caught it. I had four or five people reread it. Nobody caught it. I didn't catch it. It went to print that way. And when I read it, I was like, oh no, what did I do? And nobody else would care, but I cared. And so in issue two, what I did was I made that part of that character's personality that she just gets people's names wrong. So she comes in and meets this guy who's kind of the evil boss in issue two, and his name is Jerome, and she's like, can I call you Jerry? And he's like, no, you may not. And it's all because I made this mistake, but then I decided to take that mistake and make it a story element.
Is this going to be an ongoing series, or is this going to be a limited series where it's going to be 10 issues or 12 issues? Or
so it's going to be ongoing to an extent. There is an ending in mind. I do have an ending planned, and I know how we're going to get there. I have the first six issues really mapped out. So I know exactly, like I can tell you, not going to, but I could tell you exactly what's going to happen on the last page of the sixth issue. So I know like that much in advance, but I also know what's going to happen beyond that and what's involved and how we're going to kind of get there. And then I know how it's going to end, and it's going to take some time. I really hope that at some point we get picked up by a publisher, because I want to, the pace we're going right now to get to the, like the 30 issues that I need to tell this full story, I'm going to be like 78 years old by the time I'm done. So I'd like to get there a little faster, but we've been able to do like an issue a year right now with doing the Kickstarter thing and everything else just to get the funding. Cause I do believe in paying artists what they're worth. So I don't make any money off of it, but I make sure my artists are taken care of. So it's, you know, we have this story planned out, and I'm so excited for the very ending. Nobody other than my wife and myself know what the ending is. Well, Joel knows too. My artist knows because he had to know. So there's only three people know how this whole story ends. And it's just, I'm so excited for that when it happens, because it plays into the whole idea. It kind of becomes all cyclical at that point. Like you said, it ends up becoming this evergreen type story.
As you say, what, as it ends, you mean like issue number 6, like that story arc?
More like issue number 30, I can tell you. That is playing into where it all begins.
Because you're working on issue number 3 now.
Yep.
So you basically, are you like aiming to do an issue a year? Or is that what you're trying to do?
Yeah, right now doing an issue a year, I would love to do it more often. But it would take a publisher to do that because I don't want to. I know there's people that do this, but I don't want to be one of those Kickstarter that's like every 3 months I'm coming out to the same people going, okay, we're ready for the next issue and give us all your money. So that's why we've been doing it like one a year. But if we could get picked up by somebody, and I think that can happen, especially with something all ages like this. You know, if we're looking at something like doing, even if we did it as like graphic novels through something like Penguin Random House or something along those lines where it wasn't just comic issues, you know, it can be adapted into that type of stuff as well. So
talk to us a little bit about what people can expect on this upcoming Kickstarter then.
Yeah. So with the Kickstarter, we, like I said, it's for issue 3. However, if you have not gotten issue 1 and 2, issues 1 and 2 will be available as well. So don't feel like you're going to miss out. It's also interesting because it can be kind of a self-contained story. And like I said, it will launch on April 7th. So right now we do have a pre-launch page available. What you're looking at is you can see a little bit of our variant cover. And I have I've had a variant cover artist for every single issue. The very first issue was Robert Atkins, who is a good friend of mine. He's worked on G.I. Joe and stuff like that. Comics before, he's done some Spider-Man. Issue 2, we had Christy Zullo, who is a phenomenal artist, and I've been a fan of hers for a very long time, and she just knocked it out of the park. She's done stuff for DC Comics and Marvel. She did a whole bunch of variant covers recently for Marvel Comics. And then for issue 3, I went to her husband, who is Chris Uminga. And he's done stuff for Disney and also has done some stuff for DC and everything. So very excited. We always have the back cover always has art in it. I fill these issues up with as much art as I possibly can. So not only do you get the story in the issue, but you usually get 2 pinups in the issue, which kind of tell some other fun adventure type stuff behind the scenes. And then you get a back cover art and stuff like that. What we're going to have, we have a combo pack where you can get both covers, you get some stickers, you get bookmarks and some mini prints and things like that. You also have a tier where you can get a commentary of the script, which means you get a printed copy of the script. And then I go in and add my little notes on the margins to tell you what I was trying to think of and what we were trying to work towards with every single page. So that's always a fun tier. This time we're going to have 2 things we've never had before. One is we're going to have original artwork. My artist, Joel Jackson, usually works in digital art. So there's usually no original artwork at all. But because this is a flashback story, as I mentioned earlier, he decided to do flashback art, which is he decided, I'm going to draw this story on physical paper instead of doing it digitally. Yeah, it was a very cool idea. I loved it. He says, I figure it'll give it a little bit different look and everything else. So he's keeping most of the pages for his own portfolio, but he is giving up 5 pages to be rewards on the Kickstarter. And then we are doing a limited print for this Kickstarter that will never be available again. It's going to be an original art piece also done by Joel. Is going to be this epic battle of all the good guys and all the bad guys about to take on each other. I referred to it to him when I was explaining it to him as the ending scene of Rocky 3, where Apollo and Rocky are just about to hit each other and it freeze frames. I told him that's what I wanted. I was like, I want the good guys and the bad guys just about to hit each other. And so he's doing this big epic battle scene. And we're going to have 50 prints of that. They're going to be numbered, and they're going to be signed by myself and Joel. And that once those are sold, that's it. There's going to be 50, and that's going to be it. I should have one correction. There'll be 51. There'll be one extra one. And the one extra one goes to the person that decides they want the original artwork of that, because that original artwork will also be available. So those are some things we've never done before. And I thought it'd be a lot of fun because he draws so much detail. I mean, you've seen the artwork. He's so much into a page. So I've always been a huge fan of George Perez's art, where he could just fit so much into a page. And Joel does the same thing. Joel just puts so much detail that you could look at it for hours. I was like, hey, how about we capitalize that and you just draw this huge battle scene? And it's going to be colored and it's going to be specialized prints. It's going to be 11 by 17. They're going to be nice and big. And like I said, they'll be signed and numbered. And they will only ever be available for this Kickstarter. Once all 50 are gone, they won't be sold at conventions. They won't be sold on the website. That's it. So
Give us something, reason, say, like that, a parent watching or listening to say, is this comic book for my kid? If I buy this for my 7-year-old, or if they come into the convention and they're walking by and they see all kinds of comics and stuff, what would be the reason why you would tell a parent that they should pick up this comic for their kids?
Yeah, so I can give you a perfect example. Is I had a coworker of mine who I had not seen in years. She came in to a convention with her son, who was just starting to get into comic books and everything else, and she reached out to me, let me know she was coming to the convention and everything else. And she said, let me ask you, I'm a little sensitive about him being involved with like reading stuff that's too violent or too edgy or something like that.
Right.
She goes, is he safe reading your comic? And I was like, I said, I cannot stress enough how much I made this all ages. Yes, there's action. Yes, there's, you know, fisticuffs going on or something like that, but there's nothing violent in it. It's that superhero action stuff that we all grew up with as kids. You know, Spider-Man punched out the mugger. You know, that's about as violent as you're going to get with us. So it's, and it's meant to be fun. And one of the best compliments I ever got was she messaged me one day and she said she was walking past her son Jack's room and she heard him laughing. And when she went in to see what he was laughing about, he was reading my comic. And he was laughing at a part that was meant to be funny. And I was like, that was the biggest compliment I could get. So like, that just shows how much like a kid can get into it and really enjoy these characters. And I wrote a all ages story, like the all ages stories I grew up with, some of them were darker, like The Dark Crystal and Labyrinth and stuff like that. But we do have characters that can look a little creepy. We have a character named Marzana, and she's like the Polish deity of death. We don't put that in the story, but that is who she is. And my wife saw her and she's just like, well, she looks a little creepy, isn't she? Isn't this an all ages comic? And I go, it is, but it's the all ages I grew up with. And I was like, she can look creepy. We're just not going to have blood and guts and stuff like that. So,
exactly.
So we're still like the bad guys still have to look like bad guys, and the good guys are going to look like the good guys. And, and we're going to have fun with that. So,
perfect. Well, Ryan, any final comments or thoughts?
No, I just hope that people check it out, and they can go to stealthhammer.com. They will have a link on there also for the Kickstarter, so people can just go there and check it out, and there'll be a link that takes them to the Kickstarter. The biggest thing I would tell people is, because this is the compliment I got from a lot of people, and so it's not coming from me, is a lot of people said they weren't sure about it, because of course it's not Marvel and DC. But they said when they finally read it, they said they were so engrossed in the characters that they couldn't wait for another issue to come out. So like that, there's nothing more that a writer wants to hear than like that people connected with your characters that much.
Right. Perfect. Well, listen, Ryan, you're going to have to come back on when issue 4 is ready to.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Perfect. It was nice chatting with you.
Yeah, it was awesome to chat with you. Thank you so much.
So what's one of like the most that you consider one of the most like obscure toy lines that
Oh, my most obscure toy line that I loved as a kid, and not many people remember it, is Star Yours. They were,
Star Wars.
there
Okay.
was a 4-issue comic series done by Marvel for
I
it.
know Star Wars, yeah.
And they were the type of toy, just like Masters of the Universe, that came with the little mini comics in there. There were six of them.
Yep.
And it was just this hodgepodge of toys. Like, you could tell they just pulled from different Japanese toy lines and put them all together and said, here's a story altogether. And it just, nothing went with each other, but I loved it. It was just one of my favorite things. And I had almost all of them. So there's that. And then the other one that I actually love too is Battle Beasts. I remember
I love Battle Beasts.
the little figures. Yeah, those were great.
I had the moose one, the camel one. The flying squirrel one was always my favorite because I could actually fly him
Yeah,
around.
I had the bat like that. So I had the bat with, and he had like a little green hook hand and everything.
I didn't like how they kind of like cheated the system where like what was it, their version, like their second or third, where they actually created that other type of those like it was a
Marvel.
light one or
They had like
it was
stuff
something that
inside
was
and
like
everything. Yeah.
it could beat all, it could beat
All of them.
water, fire, and wood. I'm like, yeah.
It's like, don't you
And
don't
Muscle
you get it?
Man.
Yeah. Oh, Muscle Man, I had a ton of those too. Yeah.